Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Chris Evans here. Welcome back to the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky. Coming up on the show, Hollywood superstar Miles Teller has us giddy with excitement ahead of the release of Top Gun Maverick. 36 years on after the original film, he plays Son of Goose Rooster. Comedy genius James Acaster makes his belly laugh with his appearance on Mastermind. And the latest series of Hypothetical, brilliant British actor Anne-Marie Duff sprinkles clues about starring in Channel 4's brilliant new 8-part thriller, Suspect. And writing with Anthony Horowitz turns the pages of his final James Bond novel with A Mind to Kill. All of that and so much more to come. So let's kick things off. Aussie Jane, who's first?
He's wowed us in the Oscar-winning Whiplash, starred in a Taylor Swift music video, and this superstar certainly isn't slowing down. In fact, he feels the need for speed in one of the world's most long-awaited sequels, Top Gun Maverick, which touches down in cinemas next Wednesday. It's the mighty fine Miles Teller.
Good morning, Miles. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Virgin Radio. Welcome to the top of the tower.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So we broadcast our show from a high higher position than you spend most of the film.
we were pretty low. This would be at the higher altitude that we filmed at, for sure.
Right, you've made some amazing films already, of course you have, but what has it been like being part of Top Gun Maverick, for heaven's sake?
Right, I mean, it's just now I think starting to really hit me as far as the anticipation and the fan base. I mean, everybody talks about Marvel fans and comic book fans, but the Top Gun crew is ready. You know, they're loud and they're coming out in full force, and being able to kind of travel the world with Tom and see the fanfare that comes along with Tom Cruise. He's one of the most beloved, you know, stars we've ever had. So it's been really special.
Because no matter, you know, who he is and what he's done and what an amazing legacy he already has, and he's still very much around, he still puts the hours in, doesn't he? He still does the heavy lifting and more. He's a great example of leadership.
For sure. And I think he just elevates everybody around him. He's the hardest working guy. He knows everybody's name on set. He always impressed upon me and everybody, you know, how important manners are. And there's ways to go about this business. But he leads from the front. And because he's actually in this movie doing all the flying, he's doing more flights than anybody. But also that really kind of embedded the new pilots with him as well, because he knew what we were going through. The director, none of the crew, they weren't up in these jets. It was a couple of us and then Tom. So he was really just a wonderful ally to have. And now I consider him, you know, a really close friend, which is nice.
How did you get the gig?
I just paid somebody. You just gotta know how to wet the bill.
All
the right
your family's
person.
Houses. Yes. Just get me in this film.
As many houses as I could sell, I did. So the director, Joseph Kaczynski, he and I worked on a film together. The title in the U.S. was Only the Brave. I'm not sure what it was here, or maybe it was the same, but it was about wildland firefighters. And apparently he met with Tom a while ago, and he brought him like a photo of me, and then he pitched this idea of Goose's son Rooster being kind of that thread storyline with Maverick and this and that. So I would say really it was Joe, and then I had to go audition for Tom and Jerry Bruckheimer, and then that was a pretty tight room.
And that must have been a few years ago now.
Yeah, I mean, so we shot it, we started filming it 4 years ago, and then we finished it 3 years ago. So yeah, I would say it was probably about four and a half years ago.
So you're just out of your 20s.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which is why you look, because we said, you know, look, you know, you're 35 now, but he looks 28, 29 in this film. Well, because he was almost 28, 29.
Well, also I think that's because I was so tan.
Yeah.
And I think if you're tan enough, it can hide some pain a little bit.
And also the sort of manifestation of your mustache. It's a youthful looking mustache in the film, if you know what I mean. It's like one can barely grow a mustache in one's more tender years.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I have a lot of buddies that are in the Navy, and so that's called a boat stash. And that was something. I didn't feel like I really had to, kind of imitate Goose in any way. But what is so important is that as soon as my character walks on screen, that even if you haven't read about it, as soon as I walk into the bar, you're like, oh, my God, that's got to be Goose's
so
kid.
Good, man.
He's got the look and the Hawaiian shirt and a bit of that same, I think, kind of vibe in the beginning.
And he's got the honky-tonky piano skills and the karaoke skills.
Oh, yeah, man.
What a scene that is.
Yeah, that was I'm glad I kept up with my piano a bit from when I was younger.
Oh, mate, that's such, because there are we won't get, I'm not going to give it. How much do we give away?
Give that part away.
Okay. So cool. It's such a cool film.
But I do play and sing Great Balls of Fire in
you
in
certainly
the movie.
Do, my friend.
That,
you certainly
that we can
do.
Say.
So Rachel is going to see she's going to go to the premiere on Thursday. Which they're already building the sort of infrastructure for outside Leicester Square. I've never seen that before. So every morning I run through Leicester Square.
Oh, nice.
And the Downton film, they were building it the day before. This is 3 days before. That's a big build out there, man.
Well, it's Tom Cruise, I'd expect.
And it's
nothing else.
I mean, and his Top Gun.
You saw him at the Jubilee. I mean, it's a big deal.
Yeah, so that's not, I've seen the film. Rachel hasn't seen the film. She's taken a 13-year-old on his birthday to go and see the film.
Perfect.
Which is awesome.
It's a great age for it.
Of course, now he was doing his homework at the weekend, so he watched the original Top Gun. So you say there's a fan base out there, but there's all these new fans as well. I mean, this is why it could be one of the biggest films of all time.
That's what I think too.
I agree with me. And Rachel was saying he couldn't believe there wasn't any CGI.
Yeah, so we watched the original and then we watched the trailer for the new one.
Yep.
And I was telling him there's no CGI. They are flying those planes.
Yeah.
He just could not get his head around
it.
No, I mean, and that was a big reason. Tom has said ever since 1986 when the original came out that people have been asking him when he was going to do a sequel. And he just never felt like it needed to be a franchise by any means. But one of the biggest things for him to be able to do this next one, he said the technology has to be there. And he said, we're going to be up in the jets for real. Everybody's going to be up in the jets. And I think when Paramount first heard that they were going to put a bunch of actors in F-18s with Top Gun pilots and we're going to film it, I think they thought it was impossible. But I don't think that word, I don't think Tom knows the definition of, impossible or something that can't be done. He really just sees it as just the details haven't been worked out yet.
And it's not a sequel. I think it's a therapy session for what happened in the first movie. That's what it doesn't have that sequelness about it.
No, it's different.
It's just different. It's a part two. It was the film that we didn't know existed, but obviously always did in some people's minds. And thankfully, you've all brought it to life. I can see your team here who've come with you. You all are like you've been working really hard.
Well, it's the jet lag. Some of them. didn't go to bed till about 5 a.m. and then we're in my room at 7 a.m.
Yeah,
so
what are you going to do?
That's it. Show business.
Well, give my love to your mum, dad and your sister.
Have a
great week here and congratulations, Miles.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's really fantastic.
Thank you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
His appearances in Bake Off and Mastermind are nothing short of iconic. With the fourth series of Hypothetical beginning tonight at 10 p.m. on Dave, he's now the one doing the interrogating. Posing all the absurd theoretical questions you could ever need, it's King of the Flapjack, ice cream expert and comedy genius, James Acaster.
All right, James.
That's a lovely intro.
It's not a bad intro.
Is that your coat on the floor?
It's a freebie. It's a brace of freebies.
That's humongous.
Well, it's a dry rope.
Yeah.
It's something you get out of cold water from and just climb into.
Right, well, that makes sense, because that looks like a full rug.
It's a great British invention by a guy called Gideon, who invented it with his mum, because his mum was... He was a surfer, and his mum was fed up of wrapping the towel around him. Uh-huh. So then she cut a hole in the top of the towel, and he said, well, we're halfway to an invention here. And then she was a seamstress, so she sewed the sort of towel with a hole in it into the inside of an anorak, and it worked for him. And 500,000 sales later...
Wow, not many people invent something with their mum, I'd say. It's very rare that
well,
you
we
hear
don't
that.
Know for sure.
Well, it sounds like he invented it with his... Well, yeah, we don't know. Were the other ones that could have always
been... Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The old mum getting involved.
Could be a new specialist subject next time you appear on Mastermind.
Yeah, I could do that, coach.
James, you smashed it, man.
Thanks, man. I tell you what, not bad. I quickly revised in the... In the dressing room, right. And suddenly panicked and realised I haven't revised for this. Main reason I said yes to it was because A, the charity gets the same amount of money no matter what, so I didn't really have to revise. And B, they film it in Belfast and they've got really good seafood chowder there. So I wanted to go and get a nice chowder, which I did, by the way.
And the thing about Mastermind is, having done the Millionaire programme a couple of times myself, the worse you do, the less you're on. But of course, in Mastermind, nothing changes because you get your 2 minutes either way, don't you? You get 2 minutes general knowledge, you get your 2 minutes a specialist, you get your chat. It's the same for everyone. So it's a very wise move, James Acaster.
Yeah, it's very wise. I think the people who did revise, just it looked a bit, you know, in the morning we had to go to a briefing, which if you've been on Mastermind before, they brief you like you're about to, like, it's like the most serious thing ever because the fans are very angry if they think anyone's cheating. And Phil Wang was revising in the briefing, and Michelle Gale went over to him and tried to say hello, and he went, "It's exam day," and wouldn't speak to her. So everyone thinks that Phil's a nerd, and I personally am glad I'm not Phil Wang.
Did Wang win it?
Yeah, Wang won, but at what cost?
Yeah, well, he didn't wing it, did he?
He didn't wing it.
But Wang did win it.
Yeah.
Win it in the end.
Wang didn't win it, he won it.
This guy's done it. Over here. He did it.
Yeah. It was in Manchester when I did it, and they do. They won't even let you know who's filming the other episodes that day.
Sure.
And they, I mean...
Why not?
And they take you to a different time zone when the other contestants are on so that you don't even know how well they do. Like you say, they do take it very seriously. And that briefing, I was sort of looking forward to it until the briefing.
Sure.
And then suddenly I got scared.
Well, do you know what they based it on? The whole format comes from is that the guy who came up with the format for Mastermind was genuinely captured during a war and interrogated. And while he was being interrogated, thought this will be a good format for a TV show. And it's all based on the techniques that he had to undergo during that. So they're getting in your head from day one,
right,
man.
Now, I don't know whether you're making that up or not, because you've made some amazing answers to the ice cream specialist subject. See, you could have had your specialist subject as Mastermind.
I wish I had. Do you know what I wanted? They wouldn't have let me have my actual specialist subjects. I had to go through quite a few. My initial one I wanted was the comedy of Nish Kumar. That's what I wanted to do, because he's my friend. They wouldn't let me have it. So I changed it to the comedy of Ed Gamble. They wouldn't let me have that. At one point, I was going to do a Radiohead album because the drummer from Radiohead was going to be on, but then he cancelled. So we ended up at History of Ice Cream. I didn't revise it. And here we are.
Here we are. Anyway, you're not allowed to talk about Mastermind.
No.
Has it aired yet? Has it been on that?
Oh, yeah, so it's aired. Yeah, okay, yeah. What, Mastermind?
Well, not your episode.
I'll tell you what, if my episode of Mastermind hadn't aired, I'd have been absolutely flabbergasted by your research. How do they know all this stuff already?
We get preview copies. We get advanced copies.
Oh, yeah, you get your previews of Mastermind? Yeah,
in fact, the copy of the episode of Hypothetical was a special Don't Show This to Anybody Else.
Oh, yeah.
But what is it with TV? You can't tell this. You can't know where the other contestants are concerned. If you watch this with anybody else, you know, then it'll blow up in your hands and that'll be the end of your hands.
Yes. Hypothetical's like the MCU, man. We can't be leaking anything about Hypothetical. People want to know who are the cameos, what's going on.
Well, look, it's in season four, so, and it's on Dave, and it must be doing all right. It's been nominated for awards. It does extremely well, viewing wise, over on Dave. And it's you and your pal Josh, but it's not your show, it's his show, isn't it? So he invented it and then employed you.
Yes, Josh Widdicombe invented it from the mind of Josh Widdicombe. Right. And then also from the mind of Josh Widdicombe came me. So I got involved.
So what's the premise for people who don't know? Because we need to not preach to the choir, but we need to convert people.
We're not here to preach to the choir. We basically ask them hypothetical questions, hypothetical scenarios, pose them to them, ask them how they deal with it. Ask them, like, if you had to get a selfie with Nicolas Cage in less than 24 hours, how would you do it? That's just one example. Just constant silly questions, and they have to improvise it. They don't know any of the questions in advance, and it's all comedians having to think on their feet while we make it more difficult for them.
So, I mean, the Nicolas Cage question is a great question. And it's all about the question in a way, isn't it? You know, it's a bit like Taskmaster. It's so important what you decide to ask these people to sort of embark upon, whether it's, you know, a physical challenge or a conversational challenge or a mental challenge or a witty challenge. How would you answer the Nicolas Cage question?
First of all, I guess I'd phone his agent. I'd put a voice on, even though my own voice probably would suffice. In fact, I'm already in the biz. I should just stick with being James Acaster and phone them and not pretend to be somebody else, but instantly say that I've got a role for Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage famously takes any role. A lot lot of his films are pretty bad. So, oh, have you seen this? You've seen his filmography?
If he didn't take any role, then does
come on, he'd do anything. he would have done Mastermind with me that day if someone had offered it to him.
Well, he's got all those houses, hasn't he?
Yeah. In fact, maybe I would invite him on to Mastermind and say that his special subject can be Nicolas Cage. Invite him on for that, and then like at Belfast Airport, get him detain him at security.
Yeah.
And then when he's there, all scared, I'd just go in. Pap a selfie with him and then send him back on his way.
I don't even work for Mastermind. Sorry,
don't even work for Mastermind. Bad luck, mate. Oh, obviously you throw it all in his face at the end, really taunt him.
So you
him
could
about
hang
it.
Around in Bath quite a lot.
Do I?
No, you could if you wanted to because he lives there, doesn't he?
Nicolas Cage lives in Bath.
Yes,
I was in Bath recently. What a dump!
Did you not see him?
What a dump Bath is. If anyone listening from Bath, your city is the ugliest city in all of Britain, and it's ugly. And we only tell you it's beautiful so that we can keep all the posh people together. We don't have to see you, so that you all stay there together in Bath. What a dump!
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky
Virgin Radio.
Her acting chops have landed her nods from the BAFTAs to the Oliviers, and her plate is fuller than ever, starring in the upcoming Channel 4 crime thriller Suspect and treading the boards in the rave-reviewed play The House of Shades. Our next guest is made of some seriously talented stuff. It's Anne-Marie Duff.
Good morning, Anne-Marie.
Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Anything but Duff. Listen to these reviews. Here we go. Oh, Anne-Marie Duff is on spectacular form as the family matriarch in this century-spanning new play. Telegraph Beth Steele's new decade-spanning epic chronicles how the party poisoned its relationship with the working class. Duff does Constance justice, singing exquisite. You're singing in this as well?
Yeah, I sing.
Quoting Bette Davis with a swagger or sling, Duff is the soul of the play. Tart, cruel, funny, desperate. You crack on there, Anne-Marie. That's great, isn't it?
It is. I don't read reviews, so that was quite painful. But thank you for being generous and sharing positivity.
Oh, yeah, don't worry. We wouldn't have mentioned them. I mean, that does happen. And we don't really mention them. If we ever mention reviews, then they're always great. So let's talk about the play first, The House of Shades. What goes on?
It's about a family in Nottinghamshire, and it spans from 1965 to 2019. It's a play about working class people and how, you know, the domestic is the politic, you know, and so it's all about their lives, and it addresses big stuff that happens to real people.
Almeida Theatre, is that in Islington?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
I've been there a few times. It's a beautiful theatre, isn't it?
It's a gorgeous little theatre, I know. I'm so lucky.
Almeida Theatre in London, and it's on until June the 18th, which is a Saturday. Almeida.co.uk for tickets. How do you find life in between performances from day to day? Because you have to behave, don't you?
You do, and also I have to get up and get my kid to school.
Yeah,
and
got all that going
all
on.
All that stuff. And I can't, you know, when I was 24, it was a very different story, all of that. But now I need my sleep.
You do.
And I need to be with my friends.
Were you working last night?
Yeah.
Okay, what time did you get home?
Well, I rush home.
Right.
Because I used to think there was something wrong with me because I wasn't someone who wanted to go out all night. And then I heard this gorgeous interview with Hugh Jackman where he said, I think I'm a bit weird after a show. I just want to go to bed. Yeah. And I was like, thank God for that.
He's special, that man.
He's so special.
Oh, my goodness me. He did a podcast with, who was it, Tim Ferriss.
That's the podcast.
Oh,
that's the one I'm
so
talking
good,
about.
Isn't it?
So beautiful.
And how he preps himself before he goes on stage.
Yeah.
And he looks at the audience from the wings and he has gives himself a proper talking to, doesn't he, Anne-Marie?
Yeah.
And he reminds himself how much effort these people have gone to come to see him that night, you know, and, you know, how much they might earn or might not earn, and, you know, and how much of their budget they've spent on these tickets. And he never does. He always gives it 110, doesn't he?
Yeah, and especially at the moment, you know, people, if they're going to the theatre, it's a big old choice at the moment, isn't it, for people investing in theatre tickets. So you do, you want to really turn up for them.
Yeah, well done. Congratulations. And here's to you all who do that for a living. But of course, you also appear on the telly, which is something else you're going to talk about now. And this show is called Suspect, coming soon to Channel 4. So, you know, I'm doing my prep for the show. I'm doing my homework, doing more homework for the show than I did in my whole school career for anything to do with the school curriculum. I'm doing my homework. They send me episode 7. And I'm thinking, I was told this isn't on yet. It's soon to come to Channel 4. They haven't actually decided on a date yet. Why the heck have they sent me episode 7? You know, I've got to interview Anne-Marie tomorrow. I'm not going to be able to guess what happened in the first 6 episodes, but there's a reason for that, isn't there?
There is. This is a drama that's based on originally a Danish drama that is pretty much, each episode is just two-handers, just two people,
right,
roughly. And Jimmy Nesbitt, lovely Jimmy, plays the male protagonist, and he's in every episode. And the rest of us just come in for one solid show. So it's a bit like watching a piece of theatre in a way. So you just get to watch two actors really working with each other.
Yeah, and so, it doesn't pull any punches, does it, at all?
No, not at all.
I mean, it's such a brave script. It's fantastic.
It's brilliant.
And Vassos, incredibly, also did some homework towards the show for once. You watched it, didn't you?
I did. And it's sort of stayed with me. It's... I don't want to give too much away, but it was so powerful, and you are both so good.
I think this might be my favourite thing that Jimmy's done, actually. He's amazing in it. He's completely amazing.
You know
in
what?
It.
I was going to say exactly the same thing.
I've never seen him, and he worked so hard, you know. It was a bit like, you remember his performance in Bloody Sunday, you know, when you just forgot the Nesbit.
Yeah.
It's just, he's so beautiful in it. And, but yeah, I think this episode, in particular, for any parent watching it, it's just overwhelming.
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
But it is brilliant, and the whole conceit of the show is brilliant. And I was dead proud to be part of it.
Because Jimmy's such an upbeat human being in real life, isn't he? And you know, sometimes you have to park that, you know, to watch him. But you don't. Hey, you just forget, don't you? It's like watching a different human being altogether.
Yeah.
Which I know is what actors do, but you can do it. I wonder how come. I wonder why he's so profound in this performance.
It's hard to know, isn't it, whether it touched him on some level or whether we did have an amazing director, amazing Belgian director. And actors just love to act, and maybe he just went, oh.
Yeah, also, to be honest, you know, if you look at the cast and you look at other people who appear, you are bringing the best out in each other. It's like the Beatles. They always said the Beatles were so good because there were four band leaders who decided to not have their own bands but all join up and form one. And it's not dissimilar when you get such quality, you know, in these two-handers. Let's look at who else is in it. Jolie Richardson, Richard E. Grant, wow. Niamh Argar, Sacha Dhawan, Sam Heughan, Antonia Thomas, and our favourite, Ben Miller. He's our favourite.
Is he?
Yeah, we love Ben Miller.
Okay, good to know.
Anything else you want to say today?
My brother, who we talked about last time I was here, is doing well. And I got to give a little plug for Alzheimer's Society. So if anyone out there, not just a donation, but if anyone out there is dealing with it and coping with it, please call them for help and advice. They're amazing. They've helped my mum and dad so much. So, just to plug that, I guess.
You're awesome, Anne-Marie Duff. Thank you so much. Suspect coming soon to Channel 4. Do not miss it. A fantastic cast. Eight two-handers. There are, you know, not just two characters in each episode, but basically that's sort of the nub of what's going on. And the House of Shades at the Almeida Theatre in London until 18th of June, Saturday. It has amazing reviews. So good, I could read them out to the person involved, and she didn't mind. Well done.
Thank you, guys.
Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Poirot, Sherlock Holmes and 007. These are just some of the classic characters whose stories have continued thanks to our next guest. His latest book, With a Mind to Kill, is the last in his brilliant Bond trilogy and is out next Thursday. He's a master of words. He's shaken, not stirred. He's Anthony Horowitz.
Good morning, Anthony. How are you?
I'm very well, Chris. Lovely to see you.
You look quite undercover yourself this morning.
What are you referring to? The baseball hat?
Just generally, you know.
That was because it was raining when I was coming here. That's mainly it.
You're looking very cool.
Thank you.
What a book. I couldn't put it down yesterday. I started reading in the afternoon in the garden. I was still in the garden at 9:15 last night.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear it. These are the early days. I always get very nervous in the week running out to publication.
Mate.
Are people going to like it?
It is fantastic is what it is. I want to know so many things about this book and about you. I know we've talked before, but this time around, how do you know all this stuff? So, for example, here we go. Straight in Death as in Life, the Navy leaves nothing to chance. The Royal Navy Ceremonial and Drill, a drab-looking publication, first printed in 1834, devotes no fewer than 11 pages to funerals, with everything from the transport of the body to the firing party to the playing of the last post set down in carefully measured words. So, for example, the coffin will always be carried feet and foremost. The Union Jack is to be placed over the coffin as though the upper left quadrant is over the left shoulder of the deceased. Funeral honours can be given to any officer or rating in active service at the time of his death, although special dispensations may be made provided that the burial ground is within reasonable distance and that no public expenses incurred beyond the value of the blank ammunition required. I mean, obviously you can research that, but how much of it do you know anyway?
Well, I know a certain amount from Fool's War. When I was doing the Fool's War TV series, I was researching all, you know, the war and post-war times, of which, of course, Bond comes out of. And so that sort of regulation you're just reading there. Very interesting, very much a sort of Ian Fleming-style opening to start with, sort of a piece of quite dry sort of legislature on how a funeral takes place in the Royal Navy. And I love all that stuff. And I love love the fact that somebody in the Royal Navy has worked out that there'll be a special dispensation for the cost of blank ammunition. Can you imagine a civil servant who worked out what a blank bullet costs and yeah. who should be charged? So I love all that stuff. But it comes in from, you know, just I've researched that period for years and years. And of course, there's always the internet. There are that book I'm referring to does exist. It's all out there. And it's a question really of finding the material that makes you smile, that gives you a sort of sense of atmosphere and sets the context.
Yeah, and it's not the only time blanks get a mention in the book, is it?
Ah, oh, don't give too much away.
I know. I think I know where to go and how far, where to tread, discern the thin ice from the more stable ice as far as we can go without giving any plot spoilers away. It's interesting, the choices, the fun choices you make in the book, like the fact that Russian spies undercover at very important funerals may actually choose a Hillman imp.
Not only that, but a two-tone Hillman imp. That's a giveaway, isn't it? Yeah. Beige on grey. It could only be the Russians.
Why do you say that? Because it's such a funny show. It made me giggle when I read it.
Well, you're going back into the 60s, and so you're going to find a car that is absolutely classic for the 60s. But yeah. also, you've got to try and think to yourself that if two Russians turn up at a very, very sort of high-level funeral and don't want to be spotted, what is the car that is going to most draw attention to themselves? Yeah. So, you know, it's a sort of an idiocy going on there. You think about those two poisoners in Salisbury, which wasn't very funny, but one thing that always did sort of bring half a smile to my face was how incredibly incompetent they were with their sort of, you know, their ways. And that, of course, is very much sort of the Russian spying of the 1960s, which is sort of menacing and sinister, but at the end of the day, not that bright.
Right, so you're, James, you know, are you a student of Fleming or a disciple of him or something in between, a hybrid maybe?
I'm a sort of a total anorak when it comes to Fleming, I think. I mean, Fleming entered my life when I was quite young, about 10, 11. I was at a really horrible boarding school, the sort of place you got sent back in the 60s, and the discovery of the first book that I read, Dr. No, around about the age of, I guess I was 11 years old, it brought into my life everything that was missing. It was sort of sunlight, decent food, travel, adventure, excitement, women. I mean, it was all there in the book. It wasn't in my life, and it was an absolute sort of lifeline for me to get through the day, just to read the books and to imagine myself in them, to even believe that one day I might write them. I mean, it was sort of an ambition from that age, and all through my life, you know, from sort of, you know, Sean Connery to Roger Moore, all the way through to Daniel Craig. The Bond films have just been such a big part of my, you know, of my cultural calendar, just, you know, looking forward every year to the next one, like half the world. You know, half the world has seen a Bond film.
Yeah, of course.
Incredible.
One of the things that used to turn me off novels as a kid or any kind of fantasy fiction was when it got too flowery and it was all, they spend two or three pages describing the scene, that things, get on with the story. But of course, you sort of toe that line perfectly. Here we go. So here's a passage from page 33, chapter 4. And this is the description of an MI5 psychologist. The door opened and Tanner returned, followed by a man who hesitated in the doorway and seemed uncomfortable about even entering the room. Major Colin Cunningham was in his 60s, wearing a sports jacket with patches at the elbows, baggy corduroy trousers and a bow tie. He'd lost most of his hair, and what few curls remained so awkwardly thin and colourless on his skull. His eyes blinked rapidly behind tortoiseshell glasses, and Bond noticed an angry rash on one side of his cheek. He understood immediately that M had been saying. Cunningham really did have the appearance of an absent-minded professor. I mean, that's it's all in there, isn't it? How long does it take you to write how many paragraphs does that start as to become that distilled, beautifully composed?
Well, thank you for your kind words. It didn't take that long actually to write that. I sort of saw him immediately. Bond fans will know that Cunningham, CC, actually does appear in the James Bond books, although he's never been given a name. That was my trick, to take a Fleming character and to bring him to life in that way. And when I read the James Bond books years ago and more recently, that was how I imagined that character. And when you talk about description, I'm exactly the same as you. I don't like books terribly, but spend two or three paragraphs setting up the scene. I'm always wanting to get straight to the action. So I tend to, when I'm thinking about it, I go for the sort of the giveaways, the hair, the patches on the jacket, the sort of the ways somebody walks, and you sort of, I think that when we meet people, we sort of form our opinions of them pretty fast, and I think that's what I try to do in my writing as well. You know, when you get to later chapters in the book, one of my favourite chapters has a fight in the Moscow underground, and I could have spent three or four pages trying to capture what the Moscow underground was like in the 60s. It was incredible in Sydney, with sort of huge chandeliers and incredible decorations, everything. But what I want to do is to get to the knife fight. I want to get to the actual action, and you know, that comes from having written kids' books for such a long time, but also from the sort of things I love, the film films and the books that I read. I love action, I don't want to hang around with too much sort of, you know, beautiful language. Although I try to make the language as nice as possible.
Yeah, that's one of my favourite chapters in the book as well, because what you do there as an author, you dastardly talented human being, is that you let us know that there's a twist coming, and you invite us to guess what the twist is, and then you say, hurrah, well done, you guessed the twist you thought I wanted you to guess, and then you give us another one, you rascal.
I love twists. I mean, it is something that I've always enjoyed doing, because I write whodunits, and if you think about it, and whodunit always ends with a twist, that actually the killer wasn't that person, it was this person. But this book has got a lot of twists in it. It's quite surprising for quite a shortish book how many times I managed to sort of slither and slip around readers' expectations, and I think that was a lot of the fun of writing it.
Before we finish, is there anything you'd like to get out there about this book, With a Mind to Kill, the brand new Bond adventure?
Only that it's out in a week. It's my last crack at Bond. It's the end of the career of him, and I guess of me, and I just hope people who read it enjoy it as much as you have, Chris.
Well, I absolutely adored it. Thank you, Anthony Horowitz. Please come and see us again soon.
I certainly will.
Don't be a stranger. Anthony Horowitz with A Mind to Kill. It's out on the 26th of May, which I do believe is a week today. There Indeed. You go. Bada bada bing. Bada bada bond.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
All right, we've heard from a bunch of incredible guests already, but still to come. Fantastic funny guy Matt Ford has us hooked with the live show recording of his podcast, British Scandal. Aussie singer-songwriter Vance Joy delves deep into his beautiful single, Missing Piece. Professor Russell Foster reveals his top tips on sleep, fitness, health, and so much more in his mind-melting, amazing new book, Lifetime. It's already a number one bestseller. And owner of the Goodwood Estate, the Duke of Richmond, shares all the doggy details ahead of his first ever doggy festival, Goodwoof at Goodwood. Love it. So bring him on. Aussie Jane, who's next?
Our next guest pushes the boundaries of comedy and politics to the next level. His podcast series, British Scandal, pours over the catastrophic, calamitous, and comedic details of some seriously shocking, salacious stories. With a live episode at Islington Town Hall this Monday, making sure we're all across the juicy goss, it's funny man Matt Ford.
It is. Good morning, oh! Matt. How are you today?
Really good, thank you.
Here is
really
good. Nottingham Forest top.
Oh!
Shipstones.
Shipstones fine beers.
Fine beers.
This is a 1989 replica.
It's a classic. And the Shipstones still going.
Do you know what? They closed down, but then the brand has been reborn.
Has it?
So Shipstones is back, and it tastes delicious.
Do you think Boris will be celebrating a pint of something he likes
right,
this morning?
I thought the Honourable Member opposite might ask about this. I think it's notable that Captain Hindsight doesn't want to ask about Nottingham Forest, and they're fantastic running the place, and I'm sure the whole country would agree with me that you have to remain impartial. But I think I speak not only for Parliament, but for the monarch herself, when I say I hope Nottingham Forest smash Huddersfield a week on Sunday at Wembley. Yeah.
And how do you think he's going to be feeling about the police finally closing the investigation with just one fine for the Prime Minister to do with Partygate?
Well, I want to pay tribute to the police, by the way, for doing a fantastic job, and but also to you, Chris Evans, for highlighting the fact that one fine, I mean, come on, what is it? People have overdue library books and all sorts of things. I'm sure you've done 35 and a 30 before or something like that. So I think on the whole, I think I've been a pretty good boy, and I think people agree that I should be allowed to carry on being the greatest Prime Minister this country ever had.
What about Keir Starmer nailing all his colours to the mast, saying, you know, if I'm found to be justifiably fined for what I did under lockdown, I will resign as the Labour leader?
You know what I've realised about Keir Starmer recently, actually? If you want to learn how to do a Keir Starmer impression, say the phrase, it's the way he says Metropolitan Police. The Metropolitan Police. You cannot have, Chris, a situation where the Metropolitan Police are investigating. There's always that staccato, sounds annoyed about everything. It's great to be here on the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with the Metropolitan Police. He's sort of always slightly through gritted teeth. He always has a hand out there as well. Physically, sort of, always slightly at an angle. But of course, Chris, want to pay tribute to the people who got us through the pandemic. The people on the Virgin Breakfast Show with Chris Evans, sponsored by Sky. We cannot forget that. There's always an earnestness there that's very sweet.
You cannot forget that. Now, your new podcast, which I hadn't heard before, and I listened to it because you're coming on the show.
I love the honesty of it.
No, but because you don't want to preach to the choir. You want to convert people.
Totally agree.
I am a complete convert. It's British Scandal, and it's BS for short. Which you do refer to.
Yes, yeah.
Along with your co-host. She's great, by the way.
Oh, man. I mean, Alice Levine is like broadcasting, podcasting royalty.
Yeah.
Working with her is incredible. Because as you can probably guess, I'm slightly scattergun and like, I just get too excited. She is like professional.
She's so funny.
And so funny.
She's
I've never
so
worked with
funny.
Anyone so talented.
So just for people who have no idea about this podcast, which I honestly didn't, just frame it for them if you don't mind.
So we take a different scandal from British history. We do three or four episodes on it. What you'd call a deep dive. And I don't know how to explain these things. They sound like Hollywood blockbusters, like the audio production on them. So it's Alice and I talking through. So the new series is Jeffrey Archer.
Which is unbelievable.
We've done Litvinenko, Nick Leeson, Lucan. I mean, they're just incredible stories from history. We've just recorded Hatton Garden.
Right.
So they're these amazing. Some of them are really dark and sinister, but there's always a kind of comedic element. And it's on the borderline between documentary and drama. It's a genre all of its own. And there's just loads of stuff you forgot at the time, loads of stuff that's really funny. I almost can't... I've never worked on anything like this before.
Yeah.
But when you listen back to it, it's like listening to like a Hollywood trailer.
Right, Matt, busy show today. That's all we've got time for. I love you to death, you know that. I do love you to death.
I love you too, mate.
And the podcast show, london.com. You like a live podcast, don't you?
Oh, you can't beat a live show.
So what you do is you have a live show, you record it, it becomes a podcast. That's the deal, isn't it?
Yes.
So it's 7:30 and it's this Monday coming 23rd of May. What else would you like to say?
So there's only about 10 tickets left for that. So that is a special one-off episode. That'll be just one series in one episode.
This is the most limited edition tickets shout-out we've ever done.
I know.
The podcast show, london.com. 10 tickets left.
Yeah.
Or maybe not.
Maybe they may have already gone.
Who knows?
There could be one left. It now!
What else would you like to say?
I would like to say, Chris, that it's always a pleasure coming here. Genuinely, Vassos. And also, what I want to say more than anything, after COVID, after everything that's happened is, I just think the whole country needs to unite around Nottingham Forest beating Huddersfield on Sunday, May the 29th.
Yep.
I think it's the story the world needs is Forest back in the Premier League, and I truly believe it's going to happen.
Okay, well, Vassos bigged up Sunderland against Wickham over the weekend, but didn't really mention Wickham. You just said that they were like your Gary Neville impression. He just has to mention Wickham because that's who Sunderland are playing against, but it's like, so, wouldn't it be great?
Yeah, but
you know Wickham are my local team.
I know
they're
that,
four
but
miles
they've
away.
Just
I'm
been in a championship
I'm going to get
first...
stick for this all weekend.
Look,
because of you.
I think Wickham are happy enough in League One. Do you know what I mean?
It's their natural place, isn't it?
And they've just been in the championship.
Shut up, you two.
That didn't end well. This is Sunderland's game.
Like
next weekend, it's Nottingham Forest's game, and I think even Huddersfield would accept that.
I think so. Oh, and come to the Political Party Live as well. In fact, I've got Gary Neville as a guest in June.
So, just so you can study him.
Yeah. Yes,
maybe
so I can finally improve
maybe sound a little bit like him. I suppose somebody from generally around the northwest.
Just anyone, yeah. I mean, you were generally from around the northwest, right?
I know, generally. But I don't sound anything like him, do I? Right, Matt, well done, pal.
Cheers, mate.
You are the best. Matt Ford, I think you've been on the show almost more than us.
Yeah.
And you're always welcome.
Cheers,
the podcast, showlondon.com. And just check out this podcast, British Scandal, from wherever you get your podcast. It is fantastic.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's brought us the annual Goodwood Festival of Speed, and soon he'll be swapping cool cars for canine content. Take yourselves for walkies to Goodwoof, the festival for your four-legged friends, filled with behaviourists, barcore and barkitecture. Please curtsy and bow wow for the Duke of Richmond.
Good morning, Charles!
Hi, good morning, Chris. Hi.
Welcome, welcome. This is an idea that was waiting to happen for years. It's just that none of us thought of it. Who did in the end?
Well, I think we've been thinking about it for a while. We've got lots of fantastic connections with dogs at Goodwood. We've got these beautiful kennels, and we've thought for a long time we've got to do it. Then someone came up with a terrible title, Goodwood, and it kind of stuck. So there we are.
I mean, it's so obvious. All you've got to do is change the D, isn't it?
It's so obvious, isn't it? Yeah, no, so there we go. And it says it all. And it's just a Chelsea Flower Show and Festival Speed all together, all for dogs.
Yeah, I love it. Goodwood. It's the best ever title festival. Right, so tell us about the history of Goodwood. Tell us about the kennels, first of all, because now that you can stay at the kennels, it's just by the golf course. How did that happen? What purpose did they serve?
Well, they were passionate about, about their animals and their dogs and their horses in the 18th century, and they built this very beautiful kennels building for the dogs, and they put central heating in there 100 years before they put it in the house, so they were very, very, they looked after their animals way better than their family would get.
Right, now it's also going to be televised, so you your inaugural Good Wolf is going to be on the telly on ITV. That's all great news. What could people expect if they pitch up with their pooch?
Absolutely. Well, there's going to be so much going on. There's going to be lots of activities they can take part in. Starters, they'll see the best people in the world doing sort of canicross, flyball, disc dog, all that stuff. There'll be lots about working dogs, seeing them in action. There'll be crazy things like Fido's Lido, Barkor, Fastest Dog, big celebration of Snoopy, lots about health and well-being for you and your dog. Of course, really important both from a physical and mental point of view. So, you know, you can do dog yoga with your dog, Pilates with your dog, Sky Lounge, watch telly with your dog and have a lovely cocktail. There'll be just hundreds of things going on and just a celebration of your dog. And it's really all about the dog. It's not about the owner at all. So it's bring your dog and give them a lovely day out.
Yeah, in many ways, the dogs are taking the owners. I mean, obviously, the owners have to cough up the cash. But, you know about combinations of attractions at events like this, don't you? Because you know from the various automotive events and other events you put on, you know, how much retail people like, how much sort of spontaneous shows people like. And it is a question of, you know, getting all the plates spinning, getting the right number of plates spinning in the right places over the estate. So have you sort of taken, I know it sounds crazy, but can you use, like, for example, a Festival of Speed or a Goodwood Revival blueprint and sort of adapt it to a paw print?
Amazingly, yes, I think you can. I mean, we've taken lots of what we've learned from Festival of Speed, especially to this event. Absolutely. And it's all outdoors for starters. From a pure technical point of view, there's lots we can take. And also from the content. And, you know, we're doing a whole sort of like a concours event for owner and dog, which is going to be fantastic. So lots and lots, yeah. And it's been hugely helpful, actually.
Right, we need to big up the person who came up with the title Good Wolf. Do you know who it was?
Well, it might have been my wife, actually, yes.
All right, OK, so it's down to Hells, all right.
So, Janet, you'll have to big her up.
All right, now, I think, haven't I stepped over your dog or dogs early in the morning? You have dogs.
I expect you have. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, we got spaniels. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure you have done.
Yeah, all right, pal.
Yeah, on many occasions.
And
yeah.
You must also be warming up on the back of this for the Festival of Speed.
We are, Chris. Yeah, very exciting. Absolutely. Last weekend of June, again, huge amount of to celebrate their innovation. We've got lots of great drivers, cars coming all over the world. It's going to be, all the F1 teams will be there again. It's going to be a huge one. I think everyone's so thrilled to be out of lockdown and all of that, come together again and spend time having a fun time. So, yeah, it's looking really, really, really exciting and a huge one for us.
All right, so new rules, new season. I saw you on the grid in Bahrain. What do you think of the new cars? What do you know about F1 that you could enlighten us to?
Well, I think it's looking like a fantastic, exciting season, isn't it? And the new rules seem to have made it opened it right up. And, God, I mean, it's incredible. F1's just going absolutely crazy. I wasn't in Miami, actually. My son was there, but I wasn't there. But it looked absolutely amazing. Were you there in Miami?
No, I haven't been to a race yet. I've been invited, but yeah. I've not had time to go to one. I mean, I'd love to be going to Monaco in the week after next. Spain this weekend, isn't it? But, of course, what you do with the Festival of Speed is you time it, don't you? You wait for the calendar to come out and you time it so a lot of the F1 teams and the drivers can make your event.
Exactly. Yeah, we can't. So we absolutely don't ever clash with it because it plays such a big part. And just having all the people there, all the people connected with motor racing from around the world. And the Festival is unique, really. It brings together, you know, all genres, not just F1, but NASCAR, Indy, Rally. You know, everything all comes together at one moment, and we wouldn't want to leave F1 out of that. So it's important we get the date right.
I wonder how exponentially the growth of Good Wolf is going to be compared to past events you've had. Because, you know, often events work and often events don't work. But when they do catch fire, there's sort of no holding them back. And it's a beautiful part of the world to be for doggies and their owners. So what kind of numbers are you hoping for?
We're being realistic first year. We're hoping for sort of 12,000, something like that. We've got high hopes for it. And Tesla Speed, you know, we were looking at 2,000 that first year, 2,500 we told we'd get, and 25,000 people turned up and took us completely by surprise. So it was an amazing feeling. And we hope the dogs are going to do the same and that it'll become a big annual event and something very special in people's calendars.
I love it. Can people camp?
Yeah, they can camp. Yeah, there's camping, nearby camping, yeah.
Camping with all the dogs. Because a lot of festivals don't allow dogs, but of course at a dog festival you have to. I mean, you could bar humans, but you'd have to let the dogs in.
No, the dogs, absolutely. And we allow dogs everywhere at Goodwood. So obviously having this great history of dogs and the kennels and the stables and everything. I mean, dogs are allowed in the hotel and everywhere. And so this fest is all about the dog. We're expecting thousands and thousands of dogs. That's going to be pretty extraordinary.
I wonder, you know, the dog to human ratio. Because some people will come without dogs, I suppose, because they just love dogs, but maybe they don't have one, or they're in between dogs or whatever. But if you're expecting 12,000 people, that's at least, if they bring a dog each, that's 48,000 legs, furry legs. Not to mention ours and yours, Charles.
Lots of dogs.
Right, well, listen, good luck. I'm so excited about it. I love the title. It makes a smile whenever you hear it. And if it starts with a smile, it usually only gets better from there. So congratulations.
Brilliant. Thanks so much.
All right. You're awesome. Goodwood.com/goodwoof is where you need to go for tickets.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
His chart-topping, award-winning tunes have been on tons of TV shows.
Oh, stop it now.
Including Home and Away and Neighbours. Too right, because this top Aussie bloke is no joke. Here with Missing Piece from his upcoming album, In Our Own Sweet Time, live and acoustic from our stool of rock, please say g'day to Vance Joy.
G'day, Vance Joy.
G'day, g'day. Thank you, Jane. Here we go. Missing Piece. Let's do it. All right.
'Cause when I'm in a room, missing piece is found. You know when you're by my side, darling, nothing can bring us down. Oh, it's like when you're far away from me, I get lost in the crowd.
Come on, that was great, mate.
Oh, thank you, Chris.
That's so cool. Were you ready to play Clarity or Missing Piece then?
I was ready for either, and I thought that's a good one for the morning. It's not quite as high, and yeah, good charging.
Right, so Clarity is the new single.
Yes, yes.
Missing Piece was the last single, and it's from the brand new album. And the brand new album is entitled In Our Sweet Time. And Vance wrote it in lockdown, and he says has said of his album, fueled by old pals, written in the pandemic, new memories, and finding love in a not so hopeless place. The album centers on the idea of creating a life and a world with someone. And you look at the titles of the songs and you get all that. Missing Piece, obviously. It does what it says on the tin. Don't Fade, Solid Ground, Catalonia. Why Catalonia? Is that where it all happened?
Yeah, I was living in Barcelona, and I kind of moved over there to live with my girlfriend last year during the lockdowns and during COVID. And yeah, I got inspired to write a song about it.
Every Side of You, Clarity, Wavelength, Boardwalk, Looking at Me Like That. Looking at Me Like That's a great title, isn't it? But that can mean many things, because it could be the death stare if you've done something wrong, couldn't it? This one and Daylight, also gorgeous. So when you first came onto the scene, as they say, you were signed up, you were snapped up with a 5-album deal.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that? Obviously, it's a testament to how much they wanted you, but that could go either way, couldn't it, a 5-album deal?
Yeah, that was. I felt like a little bit of pressure, especially coming out of the gates with my song Riptide. I was like, okay, 5 albums. And I remember, like, in the first meeting, it was like, can we have like just 5 more hits and then we'll be good? And I was like, okay. But I just kept my head down, kept writing songs, and it's just, you know, the songs keep coming even during COVID and lockdowns and stuff. The songs kept coming along.
Yeah, and the pressure, you know, the right kind of pressure works, doesn't it? Mm-hmm, you know, there's positive pressure and there's negative pressure. It's like when Seinfeld and Curb's guy.
Larry David,
yeah, thank you very much, Vance. You're welcome anytime. Larry David came up with the pilot for Seinfeld, and it was 23 minutes long. And CBS said, yes, that's great. Yeah, we'll have 23 more of those a year for the next 11 years. okay. Is that how this TV thing works? Which is why, in the end, they just sort of had to stop doing it. You're playing on Sunday in Coco. It's sold out. We've got a website for tickets here, but it's sold out, Coco in Camden. Have you played Coco before?
Never been there, no.
Oh, my goodness me, it's one of the best venues ever.
Okay.
It's legendary. It used to be called the Camden Palace. I've been there so many times. I saw Prince there once playing an after show. So wow. I went to watch him at Wembley, and then he plays his own party because he can't, you know, he just loved playing. Mm. And he went on stage about 12:30, and we knew there was going to be an after show, and the after show was in Camden Palace, and we were all invited there. But we just thought it'd be a party with, didn't even think there'd be a live band, let alone Prince playing a longer gig at this after show than he did at Wembley Arena, and it went off. Wow. And his drummer, Kat, I think she was called Kat, it was her birthday. So they went, I think it was like 4 or 5 o'clock we got out of there. Not that any of us minded at all. But it's also in Camden. Have you been to Camden before?
I have been, yeah.
See, if I had a gig in Camden on Sunday at Coco, I find it very hard to be well behaved before that in Camden. It's just the best place ever, isn't it? I love Camden so much. Where have you, you know, when have you been there before? What did you get to do?
I've just been here like a few times. It's been it's been over 4 years since I've been in London. So
welcome back.
It's great to be back, you know, and it's all, you know, coming back to me, like the touring thing. I've played like one show last week. It's been 2.5 years. So, and also, you know, my girlfriend's here. I feel like I'm on holidays, but I'll try to be behaved so I can actually sing on Sunday night.
All right, here we go. This is your worldwide smash. Here we have Vance Joy with us live today and Riptide.
Here we go.
Lady, running down to the riptide, taking away to the dark side. I want to be your left hand man. I love you when you're singing that song, and I got a lump in my throat because you're going to sing the words wrong.
Very strong this morning. And he went for the finger picking too. Didn't chicken out of that, did you?
No, that's well drilled now.
Good vibes, man. Marie Whitehouse says, great hearing Vance this morning. Vance Joy gig at Ali Pally was my partner and I's first date back in October 2018.
Oh, beautiful.
Which is probably the last time you were here.
It was, yeah.
I'd imagine. Things have progressed and we now have a 2-year-old and a bump on the way. Bada bada boom. Julian Downton, OMG, Vance Joy. First song this morning, Missing Peace, reminds me of dancing around the kitchen with my then 8-month-old granddaughter. She brought a family together in more ways than I can explain. She is our missing piece and Ebony is her name. That's what music is. Oh, isn't it?
It's beautiful.
Music is what feelings sound like. all right, so you are gigging this Sunday. Vance Joy is gigging this Sunday at Coco in Canberra. You can't go. Well, you can go, but you'll have to sort of put a cup against the wall because it's sold out. However, you have announced it. You're very organised. You've announced one gig for next April.
yes, all planned out.
Another gig. So where's that going to be?
That's going to be at the Apollo.
The events of Apollo.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And tickets available for that now because he's a very organised young man, this guy. VanceJoy.com and Vance Joy. Not your original name. Cool name though, man.
Thank you. Yeah. That's a stage name that I picked up about, you know, before I started. But my real name's James. But Vance Joy, cool name out of a book.
Really?
Yeah.
Why the heck not? Vance, have a lovely Friday. Have a great gig on Sunday.
Thank you, Chris.
A real pleasure to meet you.
Likewise. Legend.
Cheers, pal. Thank you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
If there's anything a brekkie show needs, it's a super smart neuroscientist with several salient sleeping suggestions. Thankfully, there's one here in this room. His book, Lifetime, The New Science of the Body Clock and How It Can Revolutionise Your Sleep and Health, is out this Thursday with the circadian rhythm of the night. It's Russell Foster.
Good morning, Russell.
Good morning, Chris.
So the wise late night owl meets the barking mad early birds. How's this going to go, I wonder?
Indeed, yeah. I'm okay. As I've got older,
yes.
Of course, I've got more of a morning type, but as a student, I was really quite a late type.
Right, so the new science of the body clock and how it can revolutionise your sleep and health. How come it's a relatively new science, considering it's been around for as long as we have?
Well, it's a good point. I mean, what's happened over the past 20 years, the Nobel Prize, of course, was given in 2017 for understanding the molecular mechanisms that generate this 24-hour oscillation, this internal clock within. And it is incredible. I mean, it's the best example we have of how genes encoding their protein products, those proteins interact, and then generate a 24-hour oscillation. But in parallel with this extraordinary science, you've got the realisation that these clocks are impacting upon every aspect of our life, whether it's our ability to generate a sleep-wake cycle, our memory consolidation, our processing of information, our metabolism, you name it, those clocks are involved. And that's been the revolution. It's the realization we've got to embrace this biology and use it to enhance our sleep and our health.
And ignore all this at your peril and embrace it at your fortune.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why don't we do it more?
I think there has been a tradition of marginalising sleep. Sleep is for wimps. It's an indulgence. It's a luxury. And it may go back to sort of the old Protestant work ethic, because work is virtuous. And of course, when you're asleep, you can't work, and therefore sleep, by definition, is not virtuous.
Yeah.
And I think there's that sort of baggage. And it's sort of... it's the way that we've structured our industrial society. And in a sense, many elements of the workforce have been bludgeoned into submission.
Yeah, and it's really not good for us. And we continue to sort of swim against our natural tide. Like mealtimes, for example. Speak to mealtimes, please, if you don't mind.
Well, it's fascinating because, we tend to have our main meal at the end of the day. And that's, again, a part of the way we've structured our lives. You know, the commute home, the end of the day, that's when we eat. But in fact, in the pre-industrial era, it was breakfast and lunchtime. In the medieval era, that's when all the feasts were. They were at our lunchtime. And that's really important to appreciate, because our ability to process food, glucose, for example, is much more efficient during the first half of the day, during the second. Some really interesting experiments had individuals on calorie restriction. And one group had it their calories in the morning to lunchtime, and the other group lunchtime to evening. And the lunchtime to evening lost far less weight than those on the morning side. So it impacts, you know, upon our ability to process
glucose.
And
we've allowed it to be pushed later, and then you couple it with the slowing of metabolism, and calories in the afternoon literally count double to calories in the morning. We've had somebody else talking on about that, and that is a thing. That is a true thing. And then you sort of compound that with the kind of foods we're eating and the addictive qualities of those foods, or not qualities, what things that take away from our well-being, salt, oil and sugar, of course, being the three main villains in that particular scenario. And our decision tree becoming less and less easy to resist, because we fall to temptation the more tired we get. And you have this recipe for disaster, which is happening on a daily basis, and we seem to be doing nothing about it. What can we do about it individually and also as a race?
I think we've got to get this educational message out. I think a really clear example of this is in night shift work. If you look at night shift workers, they're at higher risk of obesity, diabetes 2, metabolic problems, you know, generally. What do we provide in terms of food opportunities for our night shift workers? It's high fat, it's high sugar. Now, why nobody has actually developed a protein-rich, easy-to-digest food for the canteen to enhance, you know, individuals' health on the night shift work? It's just crazy. It just hasn't been done.
But there's a market out there, and you know, we are seeing the green shoots of more wellness and well-being. You know, again, in the interest of you know, big food, because they have to make it profitable, and that will drive. If they can make money out of it, that will drive change. And if we stop buying the rubbish stuff, they will have to change, which is good.
Yeah,
that's all great. What about different times to exercise to do with our circadian rhythms?
Well, that's a little bit complicated. So. We have this, we have this sort of different metabolic state. So during the daytime, we're taking in calories and we're burning them.
Yep.
But at nighttime, of course, we're relying on stored calories, which we then mobilise and then burn. And so there's two options here. If you exercise before breakfast, you're still on nighttime metabolism, so you're burning stored fat, you're burning stored calories.
Right.
However, our ability to exercise improves throughout the day to the late afternoon, early evening. So exercising at that time means you'll have greater power, greater ability to exercise. So you have an option. If you're a morning person and you're comfortable with this, then you could have your exercise bout before breakfast, or somebody like me, you'd have your exercise bout in the late afternoon and early evening. And that's when I can actually do more exercise more efficiently and burn more calories. So many people, for example, have a dual thing. They have a 10 or 20 minute pre-breakfast and then a 30, 40 minute, you know, on their elliptical or whatever later on in the day.
Thanks very much, Russell. You're awesome. The book, once again, Lifetime, The New Science of the Body Clock. It's amazing, and how it can revolutionise your sleep. Now, thank you, Rachel. Thank you, Vassar. See you all tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget, you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
One-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.